Good morning, y'all. I'm going to move this back because I like to move around a little bit. So we're just going to rearrange the furniture. And we're going to put that on the ground so I don't fall and hurt myself. I can't tell you how happy I am to be back with y'all. One of the things I love best about coming here is you let me play with you. We laugh a lot, and we listen to Catherine and get really excited. We show up in fantastic outfits like this lovely lady in the Patriots jersey. And I really want to say that I know something about football other than that it exists. Are the Patriots doing well? Are we excited about? Okay, good. Oh, good. All right. It's not sort of a consolation prize thing. We're excited. Please. Oh, it's Mama Bear. Well, all right. Well, that's pretty awesome. I am glad that I brought that up. And so when I come here, I get very excited to talk to you about what new concoction I've come up with in my mind. And so today I wanted to talk about a phrase that came to me at the end of the summer when I was preaching at the Tryon UU Fellowship, or what do they call themselves, the Unitarian Universalists of Transylvania County. Anyway, Ernie happened to be there that day, and he was playing music, and he was my worship associate. And he had walked in, and the sound guy, I think his name was Mark, was doing several different things. And Ernie says, "Well, how's it going, Mark?" And Mark says, "Well, some things are broken, but I'm okay." And Ernie looked at me, and I looked at Ernie, and he goes, "That's a sermon." I said, "Yes, you know it is." So I'm dying to know what Ernie came up with on this one. However, this is my take on some things are broken, but I'm okay. And I almost feel like I don't have to preach this because everything about this service so far has been how okay things are right here and how wonderful this community is in supporting each other and the wider Hendersonville area and probably even beyond that. Didn't you say you had collected for a charity in Asia? Yes? Thailand. So the good that we do, and I'm putting myself in this mix today, the good that we do ripples out again and again. So we're also going to start a little bit of interactive, just because, you know, I like to shake it up with y'all. So when I say things are broken, give me some examples of things that are broken in our world. Just shout it.
Congress.
Okay. I wondered how long it would take to get to that one, but we've got it number one. Okay. Teenagers with guns.
The North Carolina legislature.
Yet another version of Congress. Yes, the North Carolina legislature. Yes, Helen.
The Voting Rights Act.
Or lack thereof. Yes. Homelessness in Hendersonville. Yes.
The Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court. I'm noticing a pattern. Yes, Bob.
The business of cancer.
And the business of health care in general. Let's just take a brief little show of hands. Who feels cared for by the health insurance realm? Do you feel? You might, yeah, do you? Okay, so some people are getting some health care, and some people are getting some health maintenance. Fragmentation of society. That feels broken, doesn't it? Yeah. Yes. Okay.
A desperate and quiet populace that's homeless is a lot larger than we really in our conscience want to observe.
Yeah. Yeah.
On an individual basis, some people's hearts are broken.
Yeah. How many people have lost loved ones this year? Loved ones. How many people have lost loved ones this year through death? We're going just with death on the loss right now. Okay, so we have been touched in many ways by brokenness. And often we can feel like we ourselves are broken, like we don't fit. and we don't matter, and we are not seen. And yet this community says otherwise. This community of hearts and souls and hands working together says something different. And so I want to explore that with you today. Some things I didn't hear mentioned that also make me feel broken. Ebola and our response-ish, I use that word very loosely, our response to the health crises that come up. We saw it several years ago with H1N1 flu, and we see it, we saw it 25 years ago with AIDS, and we see it again and again. When something large arises, fear comes up first. Fear comes up first. And in fear, we isolate. We put up walls, and we say, not now. We're going to take care of, I'm taking care of me. And that works for a while. It does. We have to take care of ourselves in order to then reach out and take care of someone else. The ISIS group in the Middle East, pretty broken. Pretty a huge example of brokenness for me. Someone talked about homelessness, and I would also like to point out those people that I know personally who live in that very nebulous middle of $2 away from the homeless shelter, right? Or $5 away from no food in the house. They have just enough. And that's a very scary place to be, a very stressful place to be when you continually feel like you have to run extra hard to get just enough. And then, of course, we come to Congress and the people who are informing our governmental leaders about such things as global climate change or their disbelief in global climate change and therefore the lack of response. It seems sometimes that we are living on a diet of grief and fear. And what those things are is insatiable. You can never feel enough grief to hold the whole of sadness. And you can never feel enough fear to make yourself feel safe. And so these things that we feed with news and stories that are not cute puppies on Facebook, these things feed the fear monster, feed the grief, and ask us to keep doing it more. But they're never satisfied. For those of you who don't know me as well as some, I really like the tarot deck. I find it interesting. Sometimes I find it informative. I also find it really lovely to look at the pictures. And there is one card, for those of you who are not familiar with tarot, called the Tower card. And the Tower card, when it comes up in a reading, indicates massive change. Massive physical change, massive systemic change. So for instance, if you're asking for some insight with the cards about what's going on in your life, perhaps in your work life, and the Tower card comes up, it's going to indicate that you're having some sort of upheaval, some sort of big life shift. Now that may mean that you are going to lose your job or quit your job, do something else, or it may mean that your perception of how that is and how you function in that role shifts dramatically. So I want to read a little bit about the card itself. So if you picture the card, you know, it's roughly the size of my hand. The Tower card shows a tall tower pitched atop a craggy mountain. On the card, the lightning strikes and flames are bursting from the building's windows. People are seen to be leaping from the tower in desperation, wanting to flee such destruction and turmoil. The tower signifies darkness and destruction on a physical scale, as opposed to a spiritual scale, though oftentimes they come together, don't they? The tower itself represents ambitions built on false premises. The lightning bolt breaks down existing forms in order to make room for new ones. It represents a sudden, momentary glimpse of truth, a flash of inspiration that breaks down structures of ignorance and false reasoning. The people are falling headfirst to indicate the sudden influx of spiritual consciousness represented by the lightning flash, which completely upsets all our old notions. The most important aspect of the tower is that with any destruction, there comes creation. Thus, the tower card represents an awakening that is about inspiration, freedom, and the release from bondage. It is a truth and honesty card that comes as a bolt of lightning to you through a shocking and impactful life event. It represents a necessary experience that forces you to get out of your comfort zone and grow beyond your present level. Anybody having any of those recently? I believe that we just had something that shifted our society in a major way, didn't we, Miss Bishop? Yes, we did. When I came here for the first time as a guest speaker, it was April 15th of 2012. I was asked to come because that month you were exploring Amendment 1, which was up for a vote in May of 2012. And I came here and I talked about why get married. I was married. I was married in a heterosexual relationship that I assumed when I did that at 23 might last for a good long time, until my own tower said that was not the place I needed to be, that that was not the person with whom I needed to live, nor was that the paradigm that my sexuality would fit into. And that was a big tower for me. And so I came to talk about this structure of marriage, this structure that just recently crumbled and became something new. District Court Judge Max Cogburn struck down Amendment 1 in the ruling of the UCC and others against Roy Cooper. And we have a new world. We have new stuff to deal with. And I was privileged and blessed to be able to be part of the day one marriage team at the UU in Asheville. I got to marry three couples that day. One couple had been together for 5 years. One couple had been together for 14 years. And one couple had been together for 25 years. And all of them were so excited to be part of that movement. All of them came with their full selves, all of their brokenness, all of their wholeness, and all of the wishes and dreams that they'd had for all those years. And I got to watch it, and I got to participate, and I got to take that Why Get Married sermon and live it and sign papers that I don't actually really care about, because I don't know that there needs to be some sort of thing with a minister versus a judge. But that's my personal feeling. And as long as I get to tell people that what they do is legal, I'm going to do it. Oftentimes, you will find me quoting songs. And occasionally, I believe I've even sang in this church. Maybe not. I can't remember which ones I've done for you. But one of my favorite songs is called The Changer and the Changed by a woman named Chris Williamson, who was very popular in the women's music movement of the early 70s. She talks of how we are the changer and the changed. We cannot be one without the other. We are always evolving, and therefore we are always influencing evolution, spiritual evolution, physical evolution, although granted, on a much smaller scale, much longer term, and social evolution. We're the ones doing that grasswork stuff, campaigning with the Campaign for Southern Equality, or the Sierra Club, or countless other, just name some. What other activities are you involved in? The thing in Thailand, what's the name of that? The Children's Organization of Southeast Asia. What are some other groups that you're involved in that are advocating change? Interfaith Assistance Ministry, somebody.
Literacy Council.
The Literacy Council, right.
Mainstay Women's Shelter.
Coalition for the Homeless.
The Dispute Settlement.
Yeah. We're doing things on a daily basis that are changing everyone's lives, including our own. How many of you are involved in a community garden? Yeah, okay. Right? Someone talked about the brokenness of the food supply. We have the ability to shift that. Community gardens, farmers markets, sharing food with neighbors. In my opinion, that's how we're going to get through any of the brokenness. Things are broken, absolutely. If I'm relying on Monsanto to take care of me on any level, I'm sadly mistaken. One, because their chemicals don't agree with my body. Two, because Monsanto isn't a human being that I can have a relationship with. It's Monsanto. It's a very large company. It's a very large organization with layers and layers and layers of blindedness. Layers and layers and layers of misinformation, probably to each other, and definitely to the rest of us. So we get to find those ways to heal each other, to heal ourselves. We are here because we belong to this time. Whatever your cosmology, however you feel like you got to this place, this is where we are. This is the work that we've been given and the time in which to do this work. We have chosen this faith community, both this particular faith community and the larger Unitarian Universalist movement, as a place to work for change, to love deeply and well, to create community, to create lasting relationships. And since most of you are perhaps a little older than me, I honor the fact that you have wisdom that you are willing to share. You have experiences. Were any of you involved in that back to the land movement of the early 70s? Because we've got another one happening right now. I'm sure you've seen it, you know? Who are the people at the farmers markets? They're folks in their 30s. They're folks who are, once again, buying little plots of land and raising some chickens and raising some goats and raising some food and having a vegetable garden and doing berries and all of these things that they then share. And that didn't come out of nowhere. That came from having people that they looked up to who've done it before. People who have led the way. And those people in this back to the land movement of the 70s that my parents were a part of got it from their grandparents, right? Their grandparents who had farms and provided their own food before grocery stores were the thing that we did once or twice a week. We have the knowledge and the capacity to heal the brokenness one relationship at a time. And we do. Every single time we enter in to that trusting, holy place where our hearts speak to someone else's heart. Most people, as indicated especially in this room, are not trusting the government, to take care of anything, much less take care of me personally. We are the changers and the changed. We are the ones we have been waiting for. And how do we do this? Same way it has always been done. Love, community, relationships, friendships, and faith. Anne Lamott says that faith includes noticing the mess, the emptiness, and the discomfort, and letting it be there until the light returns. Because you can't fight every single moment of the day. Sometimes you just get to rest and then wait for the light, because it always comes back. I'd like to close with this poem by the artist Judy Chicago. Judy Chicago is one of my favorites. And in case the synapses are not quite connecting as quickly as sometimes mine wish they did, Judy Chicago was the woman who did the art installation called The Dinner Party. And it is one of my great dreams to be able to walk into that room at the Brooklyn Museum and just bathe in it. She writes, "Then all that has divided us will merge, and then compassion will be wedded to power, and then softness will come to a world that is harsh and unkind. And then both men and women will be gentle, and then both women and men will be strong. And then no person will be subject to another's will. And then all will be rich and free and varied. And then the greed of some will give way to the needs of many. And then all will share equally in the earth's abundance. And then all will care for the sick and the weak and the old. And then all will nourish the young. And then all will cherish life's creatures. And then all will live in harmony with each other and with the earth. And then everywhere will be called Eden once again." Thank you.